Rock, KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up on this last show of the year, we take a peek at the IPHC's crystal ball for its January meeting. The dearth of Chinook in the Chilkat drainage looks like it's going to continue, and we get a follow-up on the transboundary mine situation. All that and more as we wrap up 2016 on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
Managers of halibut in the Pacific will be setting catch limits in January and could be considering a small decrease for commercial and guided sport fishing fleets in Southeast. The International Pacific Halibut Commission held its interim meeting at the end of November, and scientists presented the latest information on catches and stock estimates for the valuable bottom fish. The IPHC oversees commercial sport and subsistence catches in the U.S. and Canada from California here to Alaska. Ian Stewart, a quantitative scientist with the commission, says researchers are seeing a steady, slow increase in the halibut stock coast-wide.
And it's pretty consistent with what we've been predicting over the last four stock assessments. It's not a huge increase, but just a gradual buildup of spawning biomass. The real highlights for this year are that we've seen some bycatch reductions, and the harvest policy results are somewhat more variable across areas.
Stewart explained that this year, IPHC staff changed the way they calculate the abundance of the fish and where those fish are located based on those surveys.
And that's improved our estimates, but it has changed our perception of just exactly how the biomass is distributed around the stock. And in part, it's led to our understanding that there's a bit more biomass in the central part of the stock than we previously estimated, and a bit less on the eastern side of the stock. But then superimposed on top of that are also some differences between what we've seen in the survey over the last few years and this year in particular.
Each year, commissioners from the U.S. and Canada decide on overall catch limits for commercial and guided sports fleets, as well as the way that catch is divvied up between parts of the Alaska coast, British Columbia, and the western U.S. Halibut Commission staff at the interim meeting presented several alternatives for catch limits in 2017. One would have an overall decrease in fishing coast-wide, with most of the decrease coming from Area 2B in British Columbia. Area 2C, southeast Alaska, and Area 3A, the Central Gulf, would see small cuts to the commercial and guide sports fishing catch under that alternative. Another option would continue the same level of fishing pressure that fleets have enjoyed in recent years. That alternative would translate to catch increases for the upcoming year for the Central Gulf and western parts of Alaska, but a decrease for southeast Alaska and British Columbia. The commission will decide on catch limits, other proposed changes to management, and season length at its annual meeting January 23rd through 27th in beautiful Victoria, B.C.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
2016 saw another poor run of king salmon in the Chilkat River, the lowest escapement estimate in about 25 years, in fact. The trend has persisted in the area for the past decade, and it's not expected to let up soon. Abby Collins from KHNS tells us more.
Our escapement estimates, and that's large Chinook returning to the Chilkat River drainage, from 91 to 2006, we averaged 4,442 spawners. From 07 to now, including 2016, that average is basically halved.
Brian Elliott is a Chinook stock assessment biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Haines. He's also a member of the Pacific Salmon Commission.
Our average for that 10-year period is 2,201. So that's the first real alarming piece of data, is this, we're not getting the returns back that we had seen historically through the time series.
This year's Chinook run was poor. The escapement estimate was 1,368 large Chinook in the drainage. That's fish older than 5 years. And that is the lowest estimate since 1991. But Elliot says the big concern right now is that's not an isolated case.
The primary concerns are that we are in about a 10-year period of poor production.
Fish and Game has a few different ways of tracking this trend.
We're able to estimate the juvenile production or estimate what the catches are on that particular year, and also estimate what ends up in our spawning areas. So all of that data combined gives us a full run reconstruction on Chilcat Chinook that really helps us understand what's going on with the population.
As to why this is happening, there isn't one answer. One thing Elliot is seeing is low marine survival. That is, how many smolts survive to be mature adults?
We actually are having more smolt leaving the drainage recently than before when we had good adult returns. Now that might lead you to believe, or lead to the question, what the heck is going on? So more smolt are leaving the drainage, and more smolt are dying in the marine environment.
Elliot says they're seeing a greater than 1% decrease in marine survival, which is around 2,000 fewer returning adults.
So you can see how sensitive our returns are to how well they survive in the ocean. If we had an extra 2,000 fish coming back to the Chilcat this year, we'd all be doing cartwheels. You know, we would not be in this situation, perhaps.
On top of that, Elliot says fish are returning sooner than normal. That's called early maturation, and it means the fish that are returning are smaller than they used to be. He says 7-year-olds are rarely seen, and now fewer 6-year-olds are coming back too.
Those are the big, productive, spawning Chinook that everybody's used to. Well, that age class is slowly disappearing throughout the last several years, and that's a big concern in my mind. Is if that maturation rate change becomes directional, kind of permanent, then we just have to rethink the way we're studying these fish.
One problem with smaller, younger fish returning is that they're believed to be less productive spawners. Elliot says it can also be a problem when you start to see less age diversity among returning fish.
When you have multiple age classes at the same time, the neighboring ones can kind of cover for that. Whereas if we become kind of a one-trick pony where we have a single mature aged fish in our drainage, then the risk of that single class behaving poorly is much greater. And so then, you know, and that perpetuates itself through time.
Elliot says these are problems that are happening around Southeast.
We have a lot of data to compare and say, is this happening in your river? Is this happening on the southern end? Is this a northern effect? And what we're seeing is this is a common effect to all Southeast Chinook.
So what can be done about it?
Obviously, we can take care of our own backyard. We can cut down Chilcat Inlet sport subsistence. You know, that's something we can do locally, and Lynn Canal for that matter.
But it's not limited to one group of users. Elliot says all users share in restrictions. That means subsistence, sport, and commercial.
We can cut back on some other fisheries that are perhaps high interception fisheries for our Chilcats and other Southeast stocks. So that's all things that, you know, managers and researchers this winter are going to sit down and chop it all up and see what we can do to protect not only the Chilcats, but our Southeast wild Chinook stocks in general.
In recent years, Elliot says area management has been conservative across the board, and that is likely to continue as the trend is expected to persist into next year. Reporting in Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Alaska and British Columbia are working out details on how they will handle transboundary mine concerns. Coastal Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports on the effort to coordinate monitoring and permitting on both sides of the border.
A statement of cooperation between the state and the province signed in early October promises openness, transparency, and increased environmental monitoring. now begins the work of meeting those goals. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott heads up the state's effort to address concerns about British Columbia mines near rivers that flow into southeast Alaska. He says state and provincial officials met via teleconference December 16th.
We're trying to create a big tent here, but with a very specific process of engagement and sharing and review and critical examination of all of those things that we need to.
The state's Department of Environmental Conservation will address water quality concerns. Terry Lomax is a manager in the agency's monitoring and assessment program. Testing will create a record of what's in Transboundary River water now, with an eye toward changes that could threaten fisheries, wildlife, and people.
Some of the groups that are already doing monitoring, they're collecting water and sediment contaminants of concerns, specifically like trace metals. That kind of information is going to really help us in deciding how to narrow down our focus and really kind of, you know, how to pick the right parameters and methods to be looking at.
Those other groups include tribal governments in southeast Alaska and northwest British Columbia. They'll be asked to help develop the region-wide monitoring program. Other state agencies will work on protocols for input into BC's permitting process. Mallott says the state will also develop a website to share more information about transboundary mines.
You can never say nothing will drop through the cracks, but at least we will have a process and a working relationship that is stronger and more focused and with a value construct that did not exist before.
The state's efforts accelerated last year. That came after environmental, fisheries, tribal, and community leaders pushed for active engagement with BC leaders. One mine, the Red Chris, began operations in the Stikine River watershed in 2015. Another, the Tulsiqua Chief, is closed and leaking pollutants into the Taku watershed. A half dozen to a dozen others are being explored and considered for development. Fisheries business owner Heather Hartcastle is with the group Salmon Beyond Borders.
We would like to see enforceable protections and financial assurances that we will not be negatively impacted by upstream mining in British Columbia. And I still don't see how the state of Alaska is pushing for those.
She says future meetings following up on the transboundary agreement should be advertised and made open to the public. State officials say more details will be available in January, and Mallott says a meeting of stakeholders, including mine critics, will happen within the next 6 months. In a prepared statement, British Columbia officials say the province will share equal responsibilities under the agreement. That includes water quality monitoring on their side of the border. They say tribal governments called First Nations in Canada will participate, as will the mining industry. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this year-end edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. With help this week from KFSK's Joe Ficknicki in Petersburg, KHNS's Abby Collins in Haines, and Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.